And now it's time for the Earth First Update. All the environmental news you can use. Uncle Dennis here at Free Radio Santa Cruz on Thursday, January 28th. Before we get started, I'd like to ask you to have a pencil and paper handy. That way you can write down names, addresses, telephone numbers, web pages, anything that you can use to help you take action. Let's start off with announcements. The California Native Plant Society, Santa Cruz County Chapter, is having a habitat restoration team this Saturday, January 30th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Baldwin Creek in the Wilder Ranch State Park. Linda writes, "We've got a lot of work done on the Baldwin Bluffs, and the beautiful ocean views made it easy. We'll continue our work on Cape Ivory removal at this blended coastal site. To get there, take Highway 1 west through Santa Cruz and continue northwest to the turnoff on the left-hand side for Wilder Ranch. Watch for the sign indicating a left turn once you get to the kiosk. Let the folks know there you are volunteering for habitat restoration, and they'll give you a parking pass. Meet the group at the interpretive sign at the bathrooms in the parking lot. The Habitat Restoration Team is a volunteer group working to restore native habitats in the parks and protected lands of Santa Cruz County. Their program provides an opportunity for people to learn about the natural systems that surround them while helping to restore special and wild places. No prior work experience is necessary. Just show up at the park. They welcome individual volunteers from 8 to 80, wear comfortable layered clothing, bring something to drink, and lots of enthusiasm. They'll work rain or shine, and it might actually rain a bit. But if things get particularly unpleasant, they'll call it a day. Tools are provided. Bring your gloves and your water. For more information, contact the program leader, Linda. Her number, 831-462-4041. That's 831-462-4041. Or you could email her at redwoodrn, that's REDWDRN, at pacbell.net. Or go to their webpage at www.cruzcnps.org. That restoration is this Saturday, January 30th, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Baldwin Creek, Wilder Ranch State Park. And announcing Octera Stewardship's newest habitat restoration project. Octera Stewardship is excited to announce a new partnership with Mid-Peninsula Regional Open Space District. We will be working with volunteers to restore and protect vital habitat on the Mid-Pen Preserves. This partnership will add two new preserves, Hawthorns in Portola Valley and Russian Ridge along Skyline Boulevard, to Octera Stewardship's, making a total of 20 restoration project sites. We look forward to seeing you at these unique and beautiful open spaces. Please join us to kick off the project at our first community work day at Hawthorns, an exciting opportunity as it is an open space that is usually closed to the public. The restoration will happen on Saturday, February 6th from 9:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The address, Hawthorns, 4411 Alpine Road in Portola Valley. For more information and to register, please visit the Octera Stewardship Program website at www.octera.org. That's www.acterra.org. And once again, that restoration, Saturday, February 6th, 9:30 to 12:30 at Hawthorns, 4411 Alpine Road in Portola Valley. Please register at actera.org. And here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action. It's going to take place February 15th through the 21st in Montana and Wyoming. Join the Buffalo Field Campaign for their upcoming Week of Action, planning events in southwest Montana towns, and there will be an event for everyone. Everywhere will be able to participate. We are still in the planning stages and welcome your ideas. The Week of Action will kick off on Monday, February 15th, and last through Sunday, February 21st. They have a whole bunch of events. Again, tell your friends and bring them with you. Come join us at any or all of the events. If you are able to come for the full week and would like to stay with us, please RSVP so we can make accommodations. You can find out about the whole week of action at the Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you want to give them a call, 406-646-0070, and visit their webpage at www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. That's the Buffalo Field Campaign's Week of Action, February 15th through the 21st. And Greenpeace has gone over to the dark side with their endorsement for the sealing industry in this commentary written by Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Greenpeace has now crossed the line with their endorsement of seal fur as sustainable. I initiated and led the first Greenpeace campaigns against sealing from 1975 until 1977. I never thought I would see the day when Greenpeace would sell out to the sealing industry. John Bergwald, speaking for Greenpeace, has announced that Greenpeace supports sustainable sealing. There is no such thing. Seals are threatened by rapidly diminishing fish populations and pollution. Our oceans are dying, and Greenpeace seems to be in abject denial of this reality. We need seals to help maintain a healthy marine ecosystem. Greenpeace is now playing into the hands of the fur industry and the Canadian interest in marketing seal fur to China. The organization is now giving comfort to the seal butchers in supporting one of the most brutal and bloody massacres of wildlife on the planet. As a co-founder of Greenpeace, I feel sick and betrayed by this new policy flip-flop by Greenpeace. How can any compassionate and caring person continue to support Greenpeace after this? What in the hell are they thinking? Greenpeace does not oppose the slaughter of pilot whales at the Faroe Islands or the brutal massacre of dolphins in Taiji, Japan, and now this. How long before Greenpeace endorses the illegal whaling operations by Japan, which they still raise funds for campaigns that they never actually do? The last time a Greenpeace ship sailed in the Southern Ocean to defend whales was 2007, yet the money-begging mail-outs continue to be churned out asking for donations to save the whales. I have tried to hold my tongue over the past few years with regard to Greenpeace about this is a deceitful betrayal of what we created in the 70s. They have simply spat in the face of their founders, like myself, David Garrick, and the late Robert Hunter, with this shocking revelation that the Greenpeace Foundation is a pro-sealing organization. We risked our lives to save seals from the clubs of sealers. I was personally beaten by sealers and jailed for intervening against the seal slaughter. I was dragged through icy waters and across a blood-soaked deck through a gauntlet of sealers on a sealing ship in 1977. They kicked and hit me with their clubs, spit on me, and pushed my face into the blood and the gore, and Greenpeace exploited those images to raise funds at the time. And now they dismiss that sacrifice and the hard work and dangerous risks taken by Greenpeacers back then without even the courtesy of an apology to us who carried their banner. And now Greenpeace refers to seal fur as eco-friendly. What's next? An endorsement from Monsanto? These people calling themselves Greenpeace today never took any risks for the seals, were never arrested. They never have been to the ice floes to see the brutality with their own eyes. This makes me both sad and extremely angry, betrayed, and frustrated beyond measure. Shame on you, Greenpeace. This is unforgivable and a blatant revelation of just how far Greenpeace has drifted from its roots. This commentary was written by Captain Paul Watson of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, and you can find out more about the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society at www.seashepherd.org. Here's the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. In the name of the Interagency Bison Management Plan, which is in place to serve Montana's livestock interests, hunters along the edge of Yellowstone National Park's north boundary took the lives of 120 more wild buffalo in the past week. The buffalo death toll is rising at an alarming rate and has now surpassed 300 animals. These counts reduce the buffalo to digits and the killing reduces them to meat. Yet they are individuals with families and loved ones who have their own thoughts, ideas, desires, family members they love, siblings they butt heads with, literally, and elders who teach them how to be wise. Buffalo are gifts to this living land, and they would restore themselves and reclaim their grassy throne of sovereignty with ease if we humans would only get out of their way. Entire family groups are being obliterated day after day. They are being pushed towards the brink of extinction once again by many of the same forces that nearly destroyed them in the 19th century. The war against wild buffalo underscores the hypocrisy of the arguments used to facilitate their destruction. The livestock disease brucellosis is one such excuse. Yet wild bison have never transmitted brucellosis back to domestic cattle outside of a laboratory setting. Indeed, the hundreds of gut piles strewn about the landscape include the very flesh where brucellosis lives, reproductive organs, tissues, and discarded fetuses. Meanwhile, on more than one occasion, elk have been shown to be responsible for transmitting brucellosis to cattle, yet they are rightfully free to roam. The other excuse the killers use is population control, with the livestock interest demanding that the world's most important wild bison population, which used to exist in the tens of millions, be driven down from fewer than 4,600 buffalo to a mere 3,000, and declaring that anything above this arbitrary number are surplus and unmanageable. Although there are tens of thousands more elk than bison, you'll never hear anyone claim there are surplus elk. Prejudice and lust for control are the driving factors in the war against buffalo. As buffalo blood is shed just outside Yellowstone National Park by hunters, park rangers are greasing up the gears and locks of the Stevens Creek bison trap. Ready to finish the bycapture for slaughter inside Yellowstone, what hunters fail to accomplish. Last Wednesday, Buffalo Field Campaign and others attended a tour of the currently empty facility. It won't be long before the eerily quiet fortified walls of the trap are clanking and rattling with terrified buffalo, trying to find any means of escape. When the buffalo are shut in, the public is shut out. Yellowstone prefers to hide the abuse, terror, and torment that they put the buffalo through, but they are being challenged for this secrecy. On Tuesday, a lawsuit was filed against Yellowstone for violating First Amendment rights. As a result of years of secrecy and lack of transparency surrounding bison capture operations, Yellowstone National Park is facing legal action. The Animal Legal Defense Fund, Jamie M. Woolsey of the private Wyoming law firm of Fuller, Sandifer & Associates, LLC, and two constitutional law professors filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of journalist Christopher Ketchum and wild bison advocate Stephanie Shea, who are seeking access to Yellowstone National Park's controversial bison trapping operations that lead to the slaughter of hundreds of bison. The lawsuit argues that the First Amendment guarantees citizens and journalists reasonable, non-disruptive access to a publicly funded national park. And please stay tuned because our next story will be about that lawsuit. For further information about the Buffalo Field Campaign, go to their website, www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. You can send donations to the Buffalo Field Campaign at P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana, 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. Once again, that website, www.buffalofieldcampaign, where you can find all that information and more. The Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And Yellowstone National Park plans to slaughter hundreds of bison, and a lawsuit is filed in this story from the Animal Legal Defense Fund, as found on the Earth First Newswire. The Animal Legal Defense Fund, Jamie M. Woolsey of the private Wyoming law firm Fuller, Sandifer & Associates, LLC, and two constitutional law professors have filed a federal lawsuit on behalf of journalist Christopher Ketchum and wild bison advocate Stephanie Shea, who are seeking access to Yellowstone Park's controversial bison trapping operations that lead to the slaughter of hundreds of bison. The lawsuit argues that the First Amendment guarantees citizens and journalists reasonable, non-disruptive access to publicly funded national park lands. The National Park Service is scheduled to capture and facilitate the killing of up to 900 bison inside Yellowstone Park starting on February 15, 2016. During the capture and kill operations, the Park Service closes parts of the park to public access. It's ironic that to benefit Montana ranchers grazing their cattle, an invasive species, Yellowstone Park has agreed to facilitate the capture and killing of 900 American bison, an iconic native species, said law professor and ALDF attorney Justin Marceau. Past accounts of similar bison killing operations have provided evidence of brutal treatment of the animals. The centerpiece of the park's role in the slaughter is the Stevens Creek Capture Facility, which is located entirely within the national park. The bison are driven into the facility, held in pens, tested, and eventually forced onto trucks and transported to slaughter. In recent years, the Park Service reversed its previous policy that allowed members of the public to witness and document the operation. The Park Service itself shot video and photographs, and now proposes to offer only 3 supervised tours, including one when the trap facility at Stevens Creek was not in operation. Yellowstone's Public Information Office also used to offer information on how many bison were captured, shipped to slaughter, or injured each day. During the past 2 bison kills, however, the park delayed release of that information for 2 weeks. If the First Amendment right to access is to mean anything, Marceau went on to say, it means that citizens and journalists should have a reasonable, non-disruptive access to their publicly funded national park to observe and memorialize one of the most controversial uses of national park land imaginable. No one wants their federal tax dollars to be used by Park Service rangers to abuse and kill the very animals the service is responsible for protecting, said Shea. The Park Service doesn't want the public to see these shameful activities. Ketchum has written about the bison controversy for Vice, Harper's, and other magazines and websites. I want full access to the operations, he said, so I can effectively report on the issue. I want to be able to see the suffering of these animals up close and thus bring readers up close. Denying access to the park during this controversial publicly funded wildlife slaughter campaign is very similar to the intent of ag gag laws, said ALDF Director Stephen Wells. Such laws gag would-be whistleblowers, journalists, and activists by making it illegal to record and disseminate photos or footage taken in agricultural operations. The ALDF has successfully proven ag gag laws are unconstitutional under the First Amendment, and we are confident we will do the same in this case. The coalition of law professors, nonprofit lawyers, and private attorneys are joined by a team of top law students at the University of Denver, and they are all eager to aggressively litigate the free speech rights of journalists seeking to document the trapping of bison within national park lands. And Alameda Creek Fish Passage projects are inching forward in this story from the Alameda Creek Alliance. The critical fish ladder projects that will allow steelhead and salmon to access the Alameda Creek watershed above the Alameda Creek Flood Control Channel have been delayed for many years now. The Alameda County Water District recently provided an update on these critical fish passage projects. The Water District and Alameda Flood Control District continue to work toward finalizing the designs for the two fish ladders, which are now 95% complete. The agencies estimate that the projects will require a four-year construction schedule from 2017 to 2020. The agencies will proceed with the Bart Weir Middle Rubber Dam Fish Ladder or the Upper Rubber Dam Fish Ladder beginning in 2017, depending on which fish ladder receives the required permits first. The agencies will revise the environmental review documents for the project and take public comments later this spring. A county flood control district project to create a low flow channel through the flood control section of the lower Alameda Creek and modify grade control sills to provide fish passage is being pursued as a separate project. That project is planned for 2017 and will also involve dredging accumulated sediment from the lower channel. PG&E is moving forward with a project to remove a concrete mat at a pipeline crossing of Alameda Creek in Sunol Valley. PG&E is coordinating the project with the SFPUC, which recently published a restoration report for the Sunol Valley, and the Sunol Gravel Quarry Operator, which will install cutoff walls along the quarry pits adjacent to Alameda Creek to prevent creek inflow of water into the pits. Following the removal of the pipeline crossing, the environmental review document for PG&E mat removal project will also include a project by the SFPUC to provide fish passage at critical shallow riffles in the Sunol Valley. The project will commence in the summer of 2017, and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has the lead agency for environmental review. The Zone 7 Water Agency has published draft habitat assessments for steelhead trout, native amphibians, and riparian habitat along Arroyo de Val, at the base of the Del Valle Dam, downstream from the confluence of Arroyo de Laguna, and along portions of Arroyo de Laguna near the Verona Street Bridge. Zone 7 is preparing environmental studies and hydrologic analyses to develop and identify measures to preserve sensitive habitats for steelhead trout and native amphibians in response to an Alameda Creek Alliance water rights protest. Zone 7 found that the best quality potential steelhead trout spawning habitat in these reaches of the arroyos is in the 2.5 miles of Arroyo del Valley below the Del Valle Dam. Although this stream reach has good spawning gravels and adequate pools and riffles, it lacks suitable complex cover and has elevated stream temperatures, limiting its value for steelhead summer and winter rearing habitat. Some lower quality potential steelhead habitat can be found in Arroyo Valle from the Bernal Road Bridge and to the Hopyard Road Bridge, and in the Arroyo de Laguna from its confluence with Arroyo de Valle downstream to its confluence with Alameda Creek. Overall, high water temperatures and the lack of cover limit suitable habitat for steelhead in these arroyos and support warm water species that prey on juvenile steelhead. Restoration efforts will need to focus on removing fish passage barriers on Arroyo del Valle and Arroyo de Laguna to allow adult upstream migration, predator control to allow juvenile downstream migration, and habitat enhancement to lower water temperatures and provide in-stream cover. These reaches of the arroyos support Sierran tree frogs and western pond turtles, but do not provide suitable habitat for California red-legged frogs or California tiger salamanders. Unseasonable water releases in the summer, when water should not normally be present, contributes to the persistence of invasive species such as American bullfrogs, crayfish, bass, carp, and the arroyos. Much of the arroyos do provide important habitat for riparian bird species, particularly migratory native songbirds. These reaches of Arroyo Valle and Arroyo de Laguna are highly modified and managed compared to the historical habitat and have been impacted by decades of urban development, gravel quarrying, and water management. Although not included in these reports, the best trout and amphibian habitat in the northern watershed is in the Arroyo Mocho Gorge along Mines Road, southeast of Livermore. For more information about these projects, go to the webpage www.alamedacreek.org. That's www.alamedacreek.org. And Idaho has illegally captured and collared wolves in the wilderness in this story from Wilderness Watch. Last week, we alerted you to the Forest Service had approved a plan by the Idaho Department of Fish and Game and to use helicopters in the Frank Church River of No Return Wilderness in central Idaho to capture and collar elk. We immediately filed a complaint in federal court along with Friends of the Clearwater and Western Watersheds Project to stop that project. And today we learned that IDFG used the helicopters to also capture and collar wolves in the wilderness, another violation of the law and its Forest Service permit. The Idaho Department of Fish and Game's admission today is egregious and adds insult to injury. Although Idaho claimed it needed authorization for 5 to 10 days of helicopter landings between January and the end of March for this helicopter elk collaring project, it rushed to complete its operations in the first 3 days after the Forest Service issued a permit, before any court could even consider whether that action is legal. Now we learn that the state compounded its degradation of wilderness character by taking action that even the Forest Service did not authorize, collaring wild wolves in the wilderness in addition to the 60 elk. Idaho has made its intentions with respect to the wilderness wolf population abundantly clear. Idaho has a plan in place that calls for killing 60% of the wolf population in the Middle Fork area of the wilderness to artificially inflate elk numbers that benefit a small number of commercial outfitters and recreational hunters. Idaho is not pursuing that program this winter only because we challenged this activity in court, but we have no guarantees as to subsequent winters. There is every reason to believe that these new wolf collars will be used by the state trapper to locate wolves for the purpose of killing them in pursuit of a program to manipulate wildlife populations that is fundamentally at odds with the concept of wilderness. As the federal steward of the River of No Return, the Forest Service has a clear duty to protect the wilderness from degradation caused by unjustified helicopter intrusions and from the Idaho Department of Fish and Game's illegal wolf collaring. The Forest Service must not sit idly by while IDFG flouts its authority and the mandates of the Wilderness Act. The fact Idaho Department of Fish and Game can't accept that it's in wilderness, the natural play of wolves and elk and fire and all the other natural processes should dictate the population of wildlife in the wilderness, Wilderness Watch Executive Director George Nickus said in Missoula. Idaho wants to manage it as a game farm, and the Forest Service wants to let them. It's anathema to the Wilderness Act. We intend to bring the Forest Service and Idaho's actions before a federal court to ensure there are no more unjustified helicopter intrusions in one of the premier wilderness areas of the United States. Our view is simple. The River of No Return country is a wilderness, not an elk farm, and we intend to restore the rule of law to the management of this premier wild landscape that belongs to all of the American people. And you can find out more about this or any other wilderness issues at www.wildernesswatch.org. That's wildernesswatch.org. And a watchdog finds no wrongdoing in the Environmental Protection Agency's move to block controversial Alaskan Pebble Gold Mine, in this story by Jobik Warwick of the Washington Post. The Environmental Protection Agency's internal watchdog has found no evidence of bias in the agency's efforts to block a proposed gold mine from being built near Alaska's Bristol Bay. The EPA's Inspector General, in a report released recently, said of agency officials followed normal guidelines in assessing whether the controversial Pebble Mine project should be built. The EPA is moving toward a formal decision to bar mining operations in the region, citing risks to wildlife, including the world's biggest run of sockeye salmon. The report did cite possible misuse of position by an EPA employee who used his personal email in communicating with Alaskan tribes opposed to the mine. Based on available information, we found no evidence of bias in how the EPA conducted its assessment of the Bristol Bay watershed, or that the EPA predetermined the assessment outcome, the Inspector General report said. A pair of lawsuits filed by Pebble's developer accuses the agency of showing bias in its decision to seek what is effectively a preemptive veto against mining in the region. Lawyers for the Pebble Partnership accuse EPA officials of colluding with NMN activists to short-circuit the normal review process by blocking the mine before the owner could file permits or present arguments on the environmental merits. EPA officials have consistently denied the allegations while asserting that the environmental risks are too great to allow construction of one of the world's biggest open-pit gold mines in the middle of prime spawning grounds for salmon. We stand behind our study and our public process, and we are confident in our work to protect Bristol Bay, EPA Regional Administrator Dennis McLaren said. A final decision on the mine is on hold pending the outcome of the lawsuits. Pebble officials called the report a whitewash and an embarrassing failure, saying the EPA's watchdog overlooked alleged improprieties that would have drawn the interest of Congress and a federal judge. We expect Congress to continue its investigation into the breadth of misconduct we have uncovered through the limited information that has been made publicly available, Pebble CEO Tom Collier said in a statement. But opponents of the mine cheer the report as an exoneration for the EPA and a victory for wildlife and fishermen. For years, the angling and hunting community has steadfastly pursued protection for Bristol Bay from the risks of huge mines on the Pebble, said Scott Head, director of Sportsman Alliance for Alaska. He said outdoorsmen agreed with EPA's assessment that large-scale mining would pose an enormous threat to one of the planet's premier sport fishing and hunting destinations. And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update this week. The Earth First Update is presented every Thursday evening at 9 p.m. right here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We are at 101.3 FM and www.freakradio.org. You can hear a rebroadcast of this show tomorrow afternoon at 3 p.m. as part of our Environment Friday programming. You can also hear the Earth First Update at KRFP Radio Free Moscow, Idaho, 90.3 FM, Wednesdays at 1:15, right after Democracy Now! And you can sometimes hear the Earth First Update on Truth and Justice Radio at Boston's WZBC 90.3 FM on Sundays mornings from 6 to 10 a.m. Or you could go to truthandjusticeradio.org. You can also hear the Earth First Update on Grateful Dread Public Radio, which airs at Sunday at 2 a.m. The Grateful Dread Public Radio is an internet talk radio, internet radio station at gdprnashville.org. That's gdprnashville.org. And they can also be found at tunein.com or spotify.com. And please ask your local nonprofit community radio station to carry the Earth First Update every week. It's free. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio. It's produced by Free Radio Santa Cruz. I want to thank you for listening, and please do tune in next week for another edition of the Earth First Update.